third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a great day here on this Monday afternoon. 2 hours in the books, two to go. Every Monday at this time, we head east. We check in with Vince Ferrar at WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. Also, you can follow him on Twitter, at Vince Sports. Free and easy to do. He's a good follow. Vince, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Enjoy the weekend. I mean, we're just so fortunate right now to have four NBA playoff games in a day, to have the Stanley Cup playoffs with, I think, just four awesome matchups, and to have that to be able to watch the other four. It's a real time to.
We're going to have to put Vince on hold. Vince, we got a bad connection with you, man. Bad celery. Let's put him on hold. See if we can get a better signal.
Yeah, some technical difficulties to start things off, but that's okay. We can power through.
We can power through. That's what we do on this show. We power through. By the way, Scott Burnside coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll talk some hockey with him. And while we await, just wanted to let everybody know that rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Let's see if we've got Vince Ferrara back on the line
with us.
You know what? You know what else is cool that we have never done before? Is Vince Ferrara every Monday at noon is brought to you by TechCore. How about that? Huh?
How about that? How about
big apples? Vince with a sponsor. Yeah, baby.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring him back in. Vince Ferrara, brought to you every Monday by TechCore. I don't know if you heard that or not. Vince, how you doing?
Let's try this again, guys. Got you guys hear me better now.
Yeah. Yeah, you're now sponsored, man. That's how big time you are.
Nice. Huh? Nice. I appreciate that very much.
There's a movement for freeing Cade Mays. What's the latest on that front?
Well, it's obviously a lot of support from coaches and even, you know, fans, obviously, but even Jeremy Pruitt, unsolicited, when we talked to him last, when we talked to the media on Friday, he was asked, I don't know, maybe just a general on-the-field type of Cade Mays question, and then he went on to speak about his disappointment about Cade Mays and how, you know, he reiterated that he supports a, you know, one transfer rule, which I think was going to get passed, but, you know, they had to table it because of the pandemic. And he was again expressing that, you know, he even brought up the fact that there was, you know, a lawsuit there with his parents and how what an awkward situation it was. He was kind of making his case for it. And it was weird. Originally it was said that it didn't have anything to do with the lawsuit. Then they said that they were going to take a different approach the second time. This was his attorney, said that they were going to take a different approach this time with the appeal in talking about the environment there at Georgia. So it's just really confusing, convoluted, and you're just, you know, hearing different sides of things. It seemed like the lawsuit could have been positioned for potentially to say, hey, you know, we'll transfer, you know, you clear the transfer and we'll drop the lawsuit. At least that was sort of the public perception when there was that lawsuit with his, you know, with his parents and towards Georgia. But apparently that, you know, that approach didn't work. So it's just kind of a mess. They're still in the appeal process. It may, in the end, he may end up still getting eligible, but it was just interesting to see Jeremy Pruitt come out for a second time to speak about his disappointment in the situation. And he reiterated what a lot of us are thinking, you know, there's really, you know, for the NCAA or anyone to deny a kid an opportunity to play during a pandemic just didn't make, you know, a whole lot of sense and is disappointing. And I think a lot of people agree with that.
Yeah, it's just weird for the NCAA not to make sense. I know that's kind of the strange part about all this.
one little thing on that, just a little theory. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy. But some of the things that the NCAA has done, and even the eligibility thing was a little bit a part of it, it seems like they maybe aren't really excited about moving forward with the football season for whatever reason. Seems like they wouldn't mind if it was just all pushed back to spring, just little things that you can read between the lines. And I don't know, maybe this is another way, these individual cases are another way to say, hey, you don't want to play in the fall, so we're just gonna look out for you and not grant you that waiver. Gabe Mays is the only one that they've denied, so I don't know if that's the case or not. But it's just something that crossed my mind. And anything is possible with the way the NCAA operates.
Austin Peay is going to play a football game this weekend. Upcoming.
How about that?
You know, there's going to be football games that are going to start. So where are you right now today? Because this has been kind of interesting to see week by week how we feel, right? So how do you feel today about right now the SEC still trying to forge ahead with 10 conference games? You feel like they're going to be able to pull it off? Do you feel any different today than this time last week?
I do. At least I'm really not thinking long-term or season completion, sort of thinking shorter term goals and getting the season started, seeing how it goes and hoping for the best. You know, you had the whole North Carolina thing. You know, I know Vandy had its pause. It's not like it has been widespread and everybody is shutting down. So I'm encouraged by that. And another thing that happened, it's funny because when Jeremy Pruitt talked about what they were doing with testing last Monday after the first practice, he said there were 23 positive tests total that they've had, and a lot of them were after the kids came back from 4th of July break. Stunning, right? That kids would maybe not make the best decisions during that break, and when they came back, they had more positive tests. And he said it was a learning experience for them. So I take that as, hey, some guys didn't make the right decisions. Now you see what can happen. Let's take this more seriously moving forward. And that's probably the case with a lot of places that had the positive test. So he said that they're testing now once a week, and they would test twice during the season. The way I looked at it, I don't think that's enough. I think you're asking for a wider spread. I am no expert, but knowing how frequently the pro sports do test and how they've been able to maintain, for the most part, success and isolate incidents. I know Major League Baseball's had some, but now they're over the top precautious about one positive test, whereas before I think they weren't. So they've kind of adjusted as they've gone. But for the most part, the frequent testing helps you from spreading it out throughout. So I think the SEC, right after, maybe a day or two after Jeremy Pruitt said they're doing it once a week, they modified their protocols to twice a week testing throughout the league. I think that's a positive step. Not sure why they didn't just start there at the very least, but at least they made that adjustment. So, because we're not hearing all of these, massive shutdowns throughout the league and everyone pausing, sure, it's going to be on a different level once the season gets there, but I think you'll see more players be more on point in making good decisions once we get to the season as well. So I don't know if they're going to finish, but I am more optimistic right now than it was a week ago and definitely 2 weeks ago that we'll at least get rolling on it.
The odds makers do not think Vanderbilt and Arkansas are going to be very good. In fact, they've got them deemed the worst two teams in the conference, and it's really not even close.
Mm-hmm.
UT, I think when we did the – we went over every over-under on win totals by the odds makers last week on the show. I think UT off the top of my head was 5.5, guys, unless you can remember.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay, so do you agree with that? And where are you leaning towards, over or under 5.5 wins?
Well, I think it's accurate in its range. That's what – I think a lot of us that aren't putting bias into it, that's the range that I hear a lot of people saying, 5 and 6 wins. I have them at 6 and 4 in the regular season right now. I was on a TV show, the Sports Source, on Sunday mornings I'm a part of in rotation, and I think everybody was 5 and 5 or worse. I guess one was on a caveat. But anyway, I was the one that was at 6 and 4 there, and that was – the top end. But we did a Twitter poll, and 6 and 6 had the most, but 7 and 3 was far ahead of 5 and 5. So I think fans are expecting minimum 6 and 4, and then plenty of them. Remember last week when I was talking about how fans would view it, like the initial reaction, in case when I'm asking this, the initial reaction to the schedule coming out. And we at first got some people saying, oh man, this is a tough schedule. I don't know, you know, doom and gloom, 5 and 5, 4 and 6. Well, that stuff didn't last very long. I knew it wouldn't. Now we're getting the 7 and 3s and the 8 and 2s. And now you're starting to see people ramp up and get more excited. And then as you get closer, that's only going to enhance. So I have them at 6 and 4. I think largely they'll win the games they're supposed to. And lose to some of those tougher teams, except for in that tough back-to-back duo of A&M and Auburn. I think they'll get one of those two games as it sits right now, and that's how you get to 6 and 4. Certainly, there's some really, really difficult teams, 5 of the top 13. However, as you mentioned, Arkansas and Vanderbilt, those are two teams that might not win a game in the league this year. So, there should be no reason whatsoever. If you're as good as you think you are, that you lose to those two teams. I don't care what your history is or Vandy keeping it tough for you. So the schedule is spread out. A number of teams have very difficult opponents before they play Tennessee. Alabama has Georgia the week before. Georgia, I believe, has Auburn. So a number of these teams, Missouri has Alabama. So a number of these teams have tough games before. It's spread out overall. Bye week doesn't do you a whole lot of good with Arkansas as the next game. But I think the schedule is very positive for Tennessee. And I said, even I haven't taken Cade Mays out of the equation yet either, because we'll see, maybe he will be eligible. And they have depth on the O-line too. So that's where I am. I have it 6 and 4 right now.
Talking to Vince Ferrara, and he is brought to you by TechCore here on 102.5 The Game. Vince, we had a spirited discussion on the show last week about what's the right amount of fans that you could potentially have, and then what would you have to do to make sure that if you let the fans in, that the behavior is right, you're doing it right, all of these things. And right as we were doing that, a couple of SEC schools announced that they would have a percentage of fans in the stands. Georgia and Auburn, I think, were the first two that we saw. Where is Tennessee on that?
Yeah, Tennessee was in line with that, Willie, when teams were coming out with that. And Phillips Fulmer was speaking at a function, I think, with the governor, and he said that they're probably headed towards a 25% capacity, which would put you at the 25,000 range for Neyland. Didn't necessarily offer specifics on how to execute that plan. I still think there's a lot for them to work out there. He also mentioned this, a key point, and we've kind of talked about it a little bit on the show before as well, how they looked at Bristol executing their race up there and with fans, and how there was not an outbreak of COVID positives after that. So they were able to execute it. I think that gave them some more confidence that they could have a plan with limited fans, a percentage of fans. You also talked about how with first season ticket holders, if they will have the option to opt out, which is something that's been consistent in college and in the NFL that a lot of them are taking that approach, and it's smart. And if you do opt out, you don't lose your spot and your seat for season tickets. So a lot of the things he mentioned have been really consistent with what we've seen other teams do. And he also dropped one note about the budget, and he said they're looking at losing $30 to $40 million this year, even with playing football, and that number could double if they don't play football. So, how they execute that, Will, it's your question. We'll see, but it'll take a lot of manpower and a lot of volunteers, I imagine.
So hopefully that's what you have in our state, a lot of volunteers, especially at Tennessee. Yeah.
No, unintended, that's right.
Yeah. So Vince, we talked to you last week about what we thought we were going to see, hope we were going to see with high school football. I read David Ubbin's piece on The Athletic on the first game that was played on the high school level on Thursday night in your part of the state. How did it go? What did you observe in the games on Friday night your way?
Well, I called the game on radio for the Sports Channel on AM 990 with Don Mahoney, my partner again this year. So we called Webb school at Austin East, and we're at a lightning delay, so kind of thinned out the crowd some. But most of the fans were wearing masks, and they were similar to kind of what you saw in the Bristol race, where families would be little groups, and they'd be all together, and then there'd be multiple rows, and then you'd see another group of their family and their party together that way. Most people wearing masks. We had a booth to ourselves, which was nice. Coaches wearing masks. We went and talked to the coaches on the field. They were wearing masks, and so you just haven't heard of outbreaks or anything like that. Both of the teams that we called their games said they had no positives or no impact from COVID leading up to the start of the season. I was watching the Thursday night game on TV, and they panned to the crowd. Now the weather was better. That, I think, thinned out the crowd on Friday night because we had some bad weather. But on Thursday, it was fine. And they panned to the crowd at Halls, and all excited, and looked like it was normal. Man, they were all one on top of another. That was maybe the student section. But I thought there were some adjustments, but in some cases, also, they were, it was kind of same as normal, and each place had a different amount of percentage of fans that were wearing masks and separated. So I think it's going to be different everywhere you go, and probably that way in college athletics also.
Vince Ferrara is here with us, brought to you by TechCore. And Vince, I want to go back to the schedule for a second, because you bring up high school football. I can remember when I was in high school, and even after covering games, that coaches, they would schedule opponents that they knew they had no chance. It was going to be a rough game, but it was games that they could learn from and to see what they have as a team and see how they respond. That's basically the entire schedule now. So do you view the way that the SEC, the all SEC schedule for Tennessee is, that there could be some of that maybe as Jeremy Pruitt tries to build this culture and add to it, that his team, the younger guys especially, can learn from such tough opponents?
I think so. I think the tough games are always valuable. Now, there's been some debates. I've heard some people say that South Carolina game for Tennessee is going to be a critical game that can really swing the season for them. And I don't know if I see it that way. One, they were drastically different after the first 2 weeks last year than they were later in the year. So teams evolve and they're different. So I'm not going to pin the season or a winning record on that first game. The other part of it is that I don't think any of these coaches, no matter what they say, that they feel good about their team, blah, 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 I don't think any of these coaches truly know what they have until they see them. I mean, both of the coaches I talked to in doing high school games are like, I have no idea. I have no idea what we have, how the kids respond. Some of these kids have never played football. They couldn't scrimmage going in. So just you're really limited. So I think you're going to see teams change as the season goes on, and yeah, those learning lessons, you're going to get a truer read on what you have by playing SEC opponents. If you were to play an FCS opponent that wasn't a very good FCS, you may get a false read. Okay, this kid's ready to go, and then they're not. So I think you find out quickly what you have. And then, obviously, I think this year more than ever, you're going to have to rely on your depth. So it's going to be a moving target from that standpoint all year.
We've talked a lot of football, but I know Rick Barnes did a Zoom as well. What all came from that?
Well, he thinks that there's going to be a college basketball season, and then they will start on time. You said that's what he thinks. He also said they cannot afford to not play the NCAA tournament for a second consecutive season. And he was speaking more towards many programs beyond the Power Fives that wouldn't be able to survive. He said he thinks that they will have an NCAA tournament in some form or fashion. And in order to do that, you have to have something of a regular season. He said there's been the bubble scenarios and other things that they have talked about, not for a whole season, but maybe for some of those tournaments that were either supposed to be overseas or in other places that maybe they could gather a group for a short period of time and get some of those games in there. But he said the key is, you know, we don't have to rush to decisions right now for basketball. Everyone, all these conferences canceling stuff. You know, let's wait to see how football does, and then how did they get better? How can we get better? And then we can adjust our plan. We don't have to jump to decisions right now. And I think that's the way a lot of us feel about, you know, the Big Ten and Pac-12's decision for football. You didn't necessarily have to make that decision. They decided to. That's up to them. But that's the approach. That was the big message he wanted to share, is that, hey, we got to get football done right first. But he thinks basketball will start on time. And one little roster thing, he did mention that he talked about almost everybody, and he was asked if one of the bigs could redshirt this year. And he said, yeah, it's possible we won't decide until just before the first game. But they have so much depth on this roster. You could probably see a Corey Walker, who was the high four-star in the signing class, probably be the one that it would redshirt, because Barnes was talking about how before he does anything, he has to get into shape, and missing a lot of the workouts in the summer sort of set him back. But yeah, that was probably the most noteworthy thing from Barnes today.
He is building a stacked roster for the next several years, isn't he?
It's ridiculous. I mean, even Anasicki, the transfer, he was raving about him and his work ethic. I don't know if you guys saw it, but the Tennessee basketball Twitter account put out all these guys flexing, no shirts on. You look at E. Pons. I mean, you kidding me? I mean, the NFL would love to have anyone on their roster that looked like that guy. And obviously it's huge to have him back. The two five-stars they add to Josiah Jordan James, who did a lot in yoga, and now he's a lot more flexible. All those guys are in better shape. This is a really deep roster, and they have the hammer of competition. You want to play, you got to sell out in every practice. You have to pay attention, and that's what coaches love. That competition is going to make them better. And I love Barnes and his coaching ability to have so many more options to be able to throw different defenses at teams, to throw different lineups at teams. He can do pretty much anything he wants now at his disposal. And with the basketball minds on that staff, that's really exciting. It's going to be such a good team and a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he thinks there's going to be a basketball season, and it's going to start on time, because he is hoping for that big time. Vince, appreciate the visit as always. You have a great week.
All right, guys, appreciate you. Thanks so much.
All right, you've been listening to Vince Ferrara. He joins us every Monday starting at noon. That's powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here in Nashville. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Predators have announced Elli Tolvanen has been put on loan to the KHL, his team playing in Finland. Also, the NHL has put out their COVID-19 testing results. They have now had over 4,600 administered tests since they've been in their bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto. And they're here to report the latest phase, the fourth week of this. They yet again have zero positive test, no positive test results, over 4,600 tests administered. So the bubble is indeed working. Now, some of the things that we talked about with Vince that I want to get your all's thoughts on. One, let's start on the college side of things. Okay, I just saw where Louisville has announced that their stadium, they're going at Cardinal Stadium, is going to operate at a 30% capacity. So 30% of their home games at Cardinal Stadium will have fans, which is about 18,000 of their almost 61,000, okay? I saw where the Hurricanes, Miami Hurricanes, and the Dolphins have announced they will allow fans in the stands. You heard what he said about Philip Fulmer and UT. So this stuff is going on. So that's what's interesting about college football. Not only are they they are still forging ahead. There, most of them are all coming out and saying, we will have fans in the stands, which is why I'm disappointed with Mayor Cooper's decision not to even attempt fans in the stands at Nissan Stadium. To me, it's ridiculous. Like, at least try. Like, if you can't figure it out and it doesn't work, at least you tried, and then you say, well, sorry, we gave you an opportunity to do this right, and you couldn't do it. But at least try.
But we don't know what's going to happen yet, though.
With what, the college stuff?
We have to wait and see if this is a smart decision or not. I think, as we've talked about, Darren, I think if everybody has discipline, I absolutely believe it can be done. But it's a big if. And I think, as you heard Vince say, and I think as we all observed, if you have games going on in 50 different places, let's just throw that number out, for example, in the high school football, you probably had 50 different versions of how close the people in the stands were watched and monitored for how strict are they adhering to the protocols. For example, if everybody is temperature checked and walks in there with a mask, that's step one, right? In order to get, I think most people did that from what I could gather, right? That's the TSSAA laid that out. But then what happens during the course of the game? Okay, it rains a little bit. My mask got wet. I got to take my mask off. Or, you know, hey, I haven't seen my friends in a long time. I want to sit with my friends. You know, there's a wide range of how you go about monitoring and making sure everybody's doing the things that you're supposed to do in order to have this opportunity to go to this game. So I think that would be my question, right? Is, and it sounds to me like they haven't really answered that, is what is the method that you're going to have? If you have 10,000 fans, and so Neyland Stadium, they said, what, 25%? So that's around 25,000 fans.
Yep.
How many people are employed to monitor the 25,000?
Well, it's impossible. It's
impossible. That's what I'm saying. Impossible. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, guess what? Things are happening, and it's impossible to monitor, just like it's impossible to monitor everything that we're doing on an everyday basis. I told you I just went up to a fantasy draft this weekend.
So we just let it go?
What else are you going to do, Willie? It's virtual. Are they doing that in youth baseball tournaments? No, they're not. They have rules, then they're not monitoring because they can't. It's impossible. It's impossible to staff people to go around and monitor every field and every situation and look at everybody watching, whether they're in the stands, under a tent, or down the fence line, and make sure they're checking on their mask at every field, just constantly walking the fields. It's impossible. Okay, at some point, people have to be trusted, and they have to either do it right or else, like I said, or else you say it didn't work, and so you had your chance, and it didn't work. It's impossible. I told you, I just went to a fantasy football draft with over 180 teams all drafting in one room. albeit a huge room in a convention center up in Bowling Green, and I felt pretty good about it. Felt pretty good, but I also know that throughout the course of the draft, I look around and people were indeed what you're talking about. Like they kind of probably mask fatigue. I saw less mask, and they were kind of hanging around their neck, or you know, just not on very well. And they just were kind of like over it, and so it's impossible. Do they go around and kick them out? No. Do they come around and somebody tap them on the shoulder? No. It gets up to them or somebody to say something like, hey, you know, if you're uncomfortable sitting around them. Luckily, it wasn't around me. I'm just observing the room. I kept mine on the whole time. They had hand sanitizers at every table. They were trying to do the right thing. Everything was properly spaced out. It was a huge room, and they tried to really keep the tables separated and have nobody in between you and the next one. Basically, a seat open next to you, or a space that would look like it would have a seat there. And so they tried to do the right things. Was it perfect? No, I'm sure it wasn't perfect. No, it wasn't. Like, there is no perfect scenario. There isn't. Just like there isn't anybody monitoring our grocery stores or Target or anywhere else we go. Nobody's monitoring what you do. So, you know, it's imperfect. So we just have to trust that things will be done the right way, and it won't be perfect when you let fans in the stands. But just where I am is we at least have to try. We have to try. Yeah. Like, to me, not trying is not the answer, Mayor Cooper. That's not the answer, not trying. Like, try and see if we can get it right. And then if they can't and they goof up and it fails, then say, well, that's on you. We tried. You couldn't be responsible.
Well, I'm all for trying. I am. I would like to see, if we're going to try and we're going to lay out these guidelines, then we've got to be strict on adhering to the guidelines. That's the trade-off. If you get the chance to play, if you get the chance to go to these games, then I would hope that we really take strong measures to adhere to the guidelines. They're there for a reason. Otherwise, just let everybody in and just say whatever happens, happens. You see what I'm saying? There's got to be a little bit of happy median here. I'm all for trying. I want to see the try. I want to see games. I want to see people have a chance to go to games. But personally, I think it's got to be, for me, if I'm going to go to the game, the least I'm going to be able to do is say, yeah, for the sake of everybody, I'm going to do the mask. I'm going to adhere to the guidelines. And if I got to be the jerk or the bad guy to go around and tell people, hey, you got to do this, then I'd be willing to have that guy out there. I wouldn't want that job, but if that's what it took to have those fans in there, then yeah, that these people, that's got to be part of it, because I think we've seen enough that not everybody is going to do it, right? You can have all the guidelines you want or the suggested things and recommendations. They're not going to do it. That's the problem. And then what happens as a result of that? You don't know coming out of the stadium that night, but what happens in the ensuing weeks? That's what people are worried about, is you're going to have a bigger spread than you would, and God forbid you have people get really sick. Nobody wants to see that. And if it just takes a little bit more stickler to the rules, hey, we've got 5,000 people here. All 5,000 are going to do this right. I think you have to work towards that. And as you said, Darren, it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like at your fantasy draft, it wasn't perfect, but they made an effort to try to put these measures in place and stick to it. They tried.
And
it was effort.
And I think that's what has to happen here. And, you know, I made the joke / serious suggestion a month or so ago of, you know, there are a lot of people that have been out of work because the bars have been closed. The bouncers, see if you can hire some people that are used to that type of enforcement to work at your stadium and to say, hey, listen, This is not a guideline. This is a rule that if you're going to be in the stadium, you have to wear a mask. You have to be socially distanced. I mean, I have no problem with that. And that if somebody takes their mask off, they get kicked out. I mean, I hate that you have to be that strict, but that's what's going to need to happen. Greg texted in and says, Darren, would you not say that the city of Nashville gave people a chance when it went from phase two to phase three, but it failed and had to go back to phase two? I mean, yeah, that's
well, there was also a lot going on. Remember, we had a lot of thousands and thousands and thousands of people gathering in the streets of downtown Nashville. Do we remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, there was other factors than just bars or anything else. Okay. So there were other things going on in our city that may have helped with that.
Right.
And it wasn't just the bar scene.
Right. And everybody, and look, the bars, I think they have learned that they need to
have
to
they have, been perfect? Heck no, they haven't.
They haven't. They need to have more protocols in place, and I believe that is the case now. But
some are making no effort. That's the problem. Some if you give them the leash of try to go by these guidelines and they blow you off, then that creates
Quit punishing everybody for the actions of some. Then go punish those people. Then take it out on them,
Darren. But that's what I'm saying. You can't do if you're going to be given the opportunity to go to the games, then what comes with it has to be some crackdown and a system of keeping people in line when they're at the game. Doesn't that make sense? Because they're on their own. If left to their own accord, there's going to be too many people that slack off.
Well, you say that, but I'll give you an example of the Bristol Motor Speedway had 20,000 fans for the All-Star race. And again, I have looked for it. There have been no outbreaks because of that event that I have seen reported. And that's something that a lot of people have been keeping an eye on. And oh, by the way, they're going to host a race here in a few weeks. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to have fans in, and they have guidelines that the tickets are going to be digital. Guests will receive temperature checks upon entrance into the stadium. Masks must be worn in common areas such as gates, concessions, restrooms, and concourse areas. Guests can remove their masks once they are socially distanced in the grandstand seats. But they have these guidelines in place, and they seem to work before. Other tracks are going to allow some fans in. So that's where I agree with Darren of, okay, you have – we always talked about a model, that you needed to have a model and that we had never been in this place before. And so with baseball, we saw what was happening – with the Korean League. Okay, there's a model now. And college football seems to go, all right, let's try it. We can change, but let's try it. Let's see what happens. And they're willing to do that with college kids. Why can't we at Nissan Stadium for a soccer game or
Chase,
a football game?
What did Bristol do when they had, okay, here's the number, 20,000. Do we know what the guidelines were, how they tried to administer those guidelines at the race? If it's a success story, and it appears to be, I'd love to know what went into that, because that could be the model for others.
These are the guidelines. I'll just read them to you right now. All ticketing transactions will be conducted digitally to reduce touch points. Guests will receive temperature screenings upon entry into the stadium. Masks must be worn in common areas, like I just read. Guests can remove masks once they're socially distanced in the grandstands.
Right. All this falls into line with everything we're saying, but I'm saying what were the methods that they used to check
your
and
answer.
Make sure people
Those
were doing
are the
methods.
There's your answer. Okay?
That's what
Nothing
they did.
New. They're not doing it. They didn't invent anything new. It's the same stuff. That's the whole point.
Bristol
doesn't have
did a good job?
Bristol doesn't have a magic wand, and they just went, hey, here we go. And we're doing it different than everybody else. No, they're doing the same stuff everybody else is going to attempt to do.
Yeah, and I believe, because we had a caller, and I've talked to a couple people that masks were, it was trying to get people to put masks on when they went to and from places.
Yep.
They said that there will be more focused reminders on that they will have people saying,
focused,
hey.
Focused reminders. I like the language they use.
Yeah, but they will have people in sections saying, hey, please put your mask on as you get up. I mean, listen, it's just like we're training ourselves to do. I went out to I've been out to eat a couple of times, and there haven't been a lot of people in there, but I have to train myself when I get up to go to the bathroom. Oh, yeah, put my mask on.
Yep.
And it's still a process for me, but I'm doing it, and other people are doing it. I'm seeing it be done. I have even witnessed somebody get up to go to the bathroom and they don't have their mask on, and a server says, hey, can you please put your mask on?
I've seen that as well.
And that's what has to happen. And it's also on, it's on all of us too, that go to the, if
that's
we,
exactly
if,
right.
If
it's
we decide
not groundbreaking
to go to the game,
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point. NASCAR's not doing any groundbreaking stuff. They're just doing exactly what everybody else should have the right to attempt until they fail. That's it. That's all I ask. Attempt.
I agree. I want to give the best shot to keep this going as long as we can, and then steadily, hopefully, increase the amount of fans. But we have to set the tone, and we have to, as a group, we have to call out the people that aren't doing it. Somebody, whether it's the fans themselves that are there, calling, you know, self-policing, or the people that are the venues themselves that are allowing people to come in, checking up on this stuff. There's got to be a combination of these things, I think, for it to work, to give ourselves the very best chance to continue this. I'm with you guys. I want to see these games be played. I want to see fans in the stands. But I feel like if we don't do it, then that increases the chances that somewhere down the road, whether it's in 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, we're going to have to put a stop sign up. And that's what I don't want to see.
Yeah, I don't
either.
So
let's give ourselves the best chance to do this. And I think to do it, it's got to be those two things I said. It's got to be self-policing, it's got to be self-discipline, and it's got to be somebody in charge checking up on people and pointing it out and saying, we can't do this. If we want to have this, this is what it takes.
Anybody check out high school football games Friday?
Of course.
I did. Mm-hmm. Did you think it was perfect?
Of course not.
Okay. Far from it.
We don't know what the effect is going to be down the road for that.
I wanted to see what it looked like, just like the rest of you. And so I did. My TV 30, I checked out the game of the week. By the way, shout out to Max Herz working the sidelines. Good job by him. It wasn't perfect in Mount Juliet. Give me a break. It wasn't perfect. Far from it. I'm not excusing it. In fact, I didn't like it. But I also saw highlights of other games, and I felt like they were doing a better job. There were some games I looked in the stands, and I was like, okay, that looks a lot better. But I can guarantee you these high school games around here Friday night that took place, they weren't perfect. And that's not an excuse. I'm not sloughing it off. I want people to be better, especially the youth. I get it. These young kids, they don't, it's kind of like going back to the Isaiah Wilson thing. It's like, it's got to register at some point. It's got to register. You've got to do this the right way. If you want to do these things, then just do the right thing, okay, so it can happen. But I didn't love it. I didn't love looking around, watching these games on Friday night, and I thought some stands were better than others, but there are others. I went, you could be better. Could definitely be better.
Right. And this is what comes to mind for me. Because we're sitting here today, and the story is not, oh my gosh, look at all these outbreaks we've had from Friday night. Thank goodness. Right? But we still don't know the lasting effect of week after week of this, what could happen as a result if we don't do the best job we possibly can to adhere to the protocols. Right? And if we're, and you heard me say this, Darren, on Friday, right? I'm not doing this retroactively after seeing what we saw on Friday. How you start is how you finish. You have to set the tone. If you're lax from the get-go, you're only going to get more lax. And then you increase the chances of somebody lets their guard down and then spreads it, and now it affects everybody. Now we've got to do some things to shut things down or pull back. We don't want to see that. So let's start off, let's build the habits from the start that give us the best chance to keep this thing going. That's the only thing I want to keep emphasizing. I want to see everybody play. I want people to be able to go watch the games. But in exchange for that, we can do the protocols that give us the best chance to keep it going week after week.
Yeah, and people that, you know, that I see on Twitter or we get texts or whatever, people that they're tired of hearing us talk about this, well, then listen, I'm tired of talking about it. I would love to, you know, I had an invite to go out Saturday night, and I went and had dinner by myself and went home. I would love to be able to go out and have the normal life again. I miss doing that. But guess what? This is where we are right now. And so if you want to complain and, you know, be that guy, then I'm sorry. This is just where we are in 2020. And we have to talk about it because we got to make a difference. And we got to learn to live with this thing. And the way that we can live with this thing is by doing some things maybe we don't want to do. And that includes wearing a mask and socially distance and realizing that things in August aren't what they were in January. And the sooner you accept that and understand that, the better off we're going to be.
Well said. We will come back. Scott Burnside from The Athletic. We'll talk all things hockey with him. Round two has started up over the weekend. We'll talk about the latest news and notes and the Preds. We'll do all that on the other side to start the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.